It's time to kick it off, yeah. It's time to do a great MMA show. It's here with topics you like out of the desert where the sun gets hot. So drop on into that Amber May spot.
Well, welcome to the Amber May Show. I am so glad that you joined me this week. And we have a very important topic that we are talking about this week. And we are talking about child abuse. And, you know, it happens all the time. And I think that as society, we need to do something more to protect the little ones who can't protect themselves. And this show this week is going to be a PG-13 type show. So if you have young children, please don't play this show around your young children. This is for mature audiences only. Joining me today is Tom Richardson. He himself has gone through child abuse, and he's going to share his story with us about what he's gone through, but he also has victory in it as well, and so we're going to talk about that.
And the problem is that I think people get too set on, we have to protect, and this is several religions, that we have to protect the church as a whole before we protect the children.
That's pitiful.
It is, because
that's the wrong mentality.
It
might be out there, but that is the wrong mentality. And that, you know, all those men that you went to in the church, God's going to have a reckoning with them one day.
Yeah.
How come you didn't help my little servant?
Right.
You know, this story that you just told me reminds me of the Good Samaritan story, where all these Jewish people, even priests, wouldn't stop and help the Samaritan,
right?
I know when story, he yeah. was beat down, and yet it you know, so it took. It's just so pitiful. It was Samaritan that helped the Jewish person, and the Samaritans and the Jews didn't get along very well. But all these religious people walk by this guy, and that is not the right mentality. It took this Samaritan, who was despised by the Jewish people, to help him.
Right.
I mean, that is so wrong on so many levels leaders in your church weren't even helping you.
It is. And it's funny, because a lot of times, as I've shared this, and like I said, it's been several years. The problem is PTSD has no time frame. And I've been diagnosed with complex PTSD. I'm getting ready for my 9th surgery on Monday. The most ninth orthopedic surgery.
Dang.
And, you know, it sends chills through my body because of I've gotten flack from church leaders, you know, in the past. And I've asked, well, why didn't anybody do anything? And it's funny, a lot of times the response I get is, well, they probably didn't know what to do. And as a child, I wouldn't have been able to understand. As an adult and as a parent myself, I have two amazing daughters who I cherish. And I look at that and I go, if somebody came to me and said, my child or this child is being beat, it wouldn't take me, regardless of what I went through, it wouldn't take me but a few moments to call the authorities.
And that's
they're
why,
the ones who investigate.
That's why God has authorities here on
that's
earth.
Exactly
because
why.
You know what? People are going to do what they want to do, and they're going to choose to do what they want to do.
Right.
And there's a lot of people that hurt other people like you've experienced. And
yeah.
people say, well, if God was so wonderful and he's so loving, why did he let this happen to me? He didn't want it to happen to you.
Mm-hmm.
There's this thing called free will, and people get to choose. Are they going to do what God asked them to do, or they're not going to?
Right.
And apparently your mother decided she wasn't going to do what God had wanted her to do, because there's no way God's sitting there saying, oh, I'm so glad she's hurting him.
Yeah.
Because you know what? God loves you more than you could even imagine. He knows every hair on your head. He knows when you wake up, when you lie down. He sings over you. He knitted you together in your mother's womb. I mean, it's just, there's no amount of love that God sent his son to die for you, so you can't tell me that he's loving that. So what he did is he set up an organization to help the ones who are weak, who are little, who don't have a voice, to be their protectors.
Yeah, and it's so true, because that's, you know, the hesitation from church leaders was wrong, because there are police officers out there. That's what they're trained to do. That's what they do. I know God sustains them when they do it. I know that he guides them when they do it, because you think about what they, just on a side note, what they see every day, what they deal with. isn't right either. Mm-hmm. Because like you said, there's so many mean people out there doing mean things to each other. And those are free agency choices. Just like the free agency of the Richardson mother to do those things to me, mm-hmm. it was the free agency choices of these leaders to do nothing. Mm-hmm. And the problem I have with that is that, you know, when somebody comes in pleading and saying, you know, and being descriptive, part of my DNA, if you will, is that, you know, a lot of people protect themselves by holding it in and not talking about
it. Right, exactly.
I've talked about it openly since the day I could talk about it, you know, after it started happening. I still to this day don't understand, you know, how I can go in there and explain to them things. And, you know, I mean, it's, you know, what I say is like small, you know, episodes of abuse are, you know, some of the minor things that she did to me. But all these things, you know, you think about it, had she been intervened with back then, how would my life be different? A lot of people say, hey, you got to get over it. You got to get past it. That's true. But I think that's a ignorant response in the sense of.
That's right.
Ignorant as in they just don't understand. As I said, complex PTSD doesn't say, you know, gosh, that happened so long ago. How come you can't get over it? You know, I think if people understood mental conditions, mm-hmm. and mine is, you know, it's not, you know, I'm not crazy. My friends will probably differ, but you know what? But PTSD is an effect of what I went through.
That's right.
And I think if people compared psychological issues with physical issues, you know, you lose your arm in an accident, some type of, you know, industrial accident, nobody's going to come up to you and say, hey, put it behind you. Get over it. They continue to do that with when it comes to psychological things like this. And I think it's because it's an ignorance. And I don't think people ever have ill will. Mm-hmm. Some do. But they're saying, well, just get over it. This is in the past. You know, don't let it bother you. The problem is that I went to church leaders time and time again knowing that I was going to have hell to pay. And I did.
It's so sad because your father is the first person to protect you, and he didn't. My guess is maybe there was domestic violence on that case, and maybe she beat him down. There's definitely something odd about that relationship.
Yeah.
You know, that your dad didn't stick up for you. There's something odd. He never hit you or beat you or do awful things to you, did he?
No, he didn't. One thing that made me realize, I was probably 17, and we were living in Idaho at the time. I didn't think he knew growing up. And I don't think he fully knew when this incident happened. But when he came, the Richardson mom, for some reason, my brother and I were in the basement. We were talking about something. And I think she heard me say something I shouldn't have said, you know, a word. That's all I remember. But she yelled my name and went upstairs. And she took me in the garage, beat me with a 2x4. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was brutal. And several hours later, the Richardson dad came home. And I heard, of course, you know, to protect my own life, I'd always listen, you know, as good as I could to the conversations going on behind closed doors. And I heard her saying, this is what he said. And she was right about that one thing. But then she added 90% more of stuff that never happened. She said, I did not do anything. I didn't touch him. And I was shocked because I'm like, are you kidding me? So he came down with the instructions from her to take care of it, quote unquote. So he came down to my room, closed the door, and said, your mother told me what happened. She said she didn't do anything. And he goes, did she? And I said, yeah. And I told him. And again, I told him for the first time. So that's pretty huge. At 17, you know, and he took off his belt. And I thought, oh my gosh, I'm getting it twice now from both of them, him for the first time. And he said, every time I hit the bed, I want you to cry. And he hit the bed like 4 times, you know, really hard. And I started crying, which was, you think you're living in terror. Crying is like a light switch. You just, whether it's intentional or not intentional, you know, it just was there. And I remember him walking back upstairs. And that's when I started to realize he's not only knows about it, he's known about it. And did nothing about it. So what happens every time they were called into the bishop's office? What kind of conversations were going on? Bishops saying, and church leaders are going, hey, we know this is going on. And they are both sitting there saying, no, it's not going on, or it's going on and there's nothing you can do about it. Which a lot of people tell me, hey, these leaders didn't know what to do. Well, how about the fact, I think that's a weak defense. How about that we're humans and you pick up the phone? We talked about police officers. That's their job. It's not a job of a clergy member to sit there and say, you know, this is happening and, you know, gosh, I don't know what to do. So there's a wall in front of me. You know, which way do I go? Pick up the phone. Let the professionals handle it.
There would be no way if a kid came up to me, I'd let them leave with their parents knowing that happened.
No.
And
no white person in the room would.
Nope. Yeah. No way. Yeah. I mean, unless the police find out that the kid's lying because he's being manipulative, that's one thing. But I want the police to tell me that he's safe to go home.
Yeah.
I don't want to send this kid home.
Yeah.
So that story you just told me really tells me that there is some, I don't know, it's, you know, like there's something. So makes me think that she scares this man to death. I don't know. I don't know. There's some odd relationship going on, and shame on him for not protecting
exactly.
you, number one.
And I used to think that it was her.
Because I know women who are in domestic violence situations would protect their children from getting beat, you know, would take the abuse for their kids.
Right.
So this is a really weird situation, and I don't understand that dynamic.
Well, we've speculated as siblings over the years what it was. She at best was 5 foot tall. He was 5 foot 10. There wasn't a physical overbearance, you know, in that sense. But it was definitely a psychological control, some issue that drove her to be the dominating factor in the abuse. Now, why she did those things, why he didn't step in, I'll never know. He passed away about 7 years ago. She still is alive. She's 80 now.
Has she ever apologized to you?
She said when all of us five siblings got together, when he passed away, we all got together. And for his funeral the night before, she happened to be there, and that was awkward, you know, because I hadn't seen her.
Oh, sure.
You know, decades. And
that would be very awkward.
And it was weird because she sat down and started talking to everybody. She goes, you know, this is sad. She was kind of trying to be the head of the family. And I was, of course, I'm sitting there going, which is weird. I didn't have the physical fear of her. I did, you know, because being older, I'm like, I could have physically taken her at 12 years old, maybe, but she already, you know, had that lock on me. But as I sat there and listened to her talk, she said, you know, life was really rough growing up, and she was kind of just skating around it. And she goes, and I know it was a little rough on Tom. Well, finished her thing. We had the funeral the next day. All that passes. And then I'm talking to my sisters later, and I'm like, I don't understand that I was a little rough on Tom, you know. So an apology kind of came out. But people that are listening and who are in the know, who are educated, know that repentance is a little bit more than, I'm sorry I tortured you for 13 years and ruined your life.
Sure.
You know, is the same thing that, you know, it ties me back into what church leaders had done, and how, had somebody intervened, what would my life be like right now? Would I have not had to have the surgeries? Would I not have the complex PTSD? You know, the nightmares still happen. You know, it's to wake up feeling like you're being choked again, to wake up, you know, I sit there and think about the, you know, she sent me to school every day without a lunch. And I'd have to
every stay. Day?
Yeah, yeah. And if I got sent with one, I mean, I'm talking like normally, no lunch. But if I did get one, sometimes it was just a piece of bread in a brown paper bag.
By That's time lunch.
Yeah, yeah, and that was lunch. And by the time lunch came, the bread's hard, you know, because it was. And so many times I stood in the line where back in those days, the schools had hot or cold lunches brought in if you were buying. And they would always try to put one or two extra in there. Well, the problem is that a lot of times there weren't. And if there were, it's interesting, the ladies there would be like, I was the one who was in line. Basically saying, hey, I'm hungry. Well, how do you survive in school when you're hungry? Oh my gosh. Number one, you
that
know,
makes me want to cry.
But then times that I was told to stay in my room if I wasn't tied to the bed and she wouldn't feed me.
Tom, we are at the end of today's program. This isn't the end of the story. I'd love for you to come back and let's pick up where we left off next week, okay?
You bet.